From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us as we take you beyond the headlines to hear directly from our nation's leaders and newsmakers in the pursuit of truth on the issues that matter most to you and your family. And it all comes to you from a biblical worldview. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and Washington Watch starts now.
I will not be intimidated, and the Justice Department will not be intimidated. We will continue to do our jobs free from political influence, and we will not back down from defending democracy.
That, of course, was Attorney General Merrick Garland earlier today in the House Judiciary Committee's oversight hearing on the U.S. Department of Justice. Now, he was trying to turn the tables. The Attorney General said the Republican effort to hold him in contempt of Congress for not providing information is just the latest in a long line of attacks on the Justice Department. Really? Well, we will talk to a member of the Judiciary Committee who was in today's hearing, Wyoming Congresswoman Harriet Hageman. And what happened? We've been told for 3.5 years that President Biden had done everything he could to address the crisis at the border.
We have surged resources of all types over months and months, not just personnel, but transportation facilities, technology, additional bed space. So we have been, in fact, not...
You've done all you can at this point.
We have done all we can with the resources that we have and within the system that we are operating under.
That was Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas. Now, something has apparently changed, because today President Biden announced an executive order that he says will shut down asylum requests once the average number of daily encounters hits 2,500.
I've come here today to do what the Republicans in Congress refuse to do, take the necessary steps to secure our border. But Republicans have left me no choice. Today, I'm announcing actions to bar migrants who cross our southern border unlawfully from receiving asylum.
Ooh, the question is, could he have done this 3.5 years ago? Well, what's changed? Maybe it's called election. There's an election coming up, and 70% of the public thinks what is happening at the border is a big problem. Well, we're going to talk with Oklahoma Congressman Josh Brkeen a little bit later on Washington Watch. The Biden White House issuing a veto threat over the Veterans Affairs and Military Construction Bill. Now, you want to guess why? Well, because Republicans are trying to ensure that these bills do not fund abortion or the left's radical gender ideology. That's right. President Joe Biden will keep care from veterans if it does not allow for taxpayer-funded abortion and gender mutilation surgeries. Congressman Dr. Andy Harris of Maryland joins me later. And finally, Dr. Fauci made a house call of sorts yesterday. The now retired head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases testified before a House subcommittee investigating the COVID-19 pandemic response. During his testimony, Dr. Fauci acknowledged that some of their dictates were not based on science.
Mask mandates for children under 5, there's scientific evidence supporting that?
There was no study that did masks on kids before. You couldn't do the study. You had to respond to an epidemic that was killing 4,000 to 5,000 Americans
per day.
He also acknowledged that the 6-foot distance requirement was not based on science either. We'll talk with Dr. Robert Malone, Chief Medical and Regulatory Officer for the Unity Project. I'll also get his take on the WHO's 77th World Health Assembly that ended this past weekend. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you. Be sure and check it out. And by the way, you want to get the latest news and information from a biblical perspective? Download the Stand Firm app today. You can not only get news and information and Washington Watch, but you can connect with fellow conservatives and believers and engage with government officials right there on the app. Be sure and leave a 5-star rating and help us achieve our goal to be ranked among the top 10 news sources nationwide. It's available in the App Store for Apple and Android devices, or you can text APP, APP, to 67742, and we'll give you a link. That's APP to 67742. Well, as I mentioned earlier today, Attorney General Merrick Garland testified before the House Judiciary Committee following his defiance of a congressional subpoena for the audio recordings of President Biden's testimony to special counsel Robert Hur. Now, this comes as evidence continues to build that the Department of Justice, under the Attorney General, has pursued a two-tiered system of justice that targets political opponents. What did we learn from today's hearing? Joining me now to discuss this is Congresswoman Harriet Hageman. She is a member of the House Judiciary Committee and the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. She represents Wyoming's at-large congressional district. Congresswoman Hageman, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Good to see you, Tony.
So your assessment of the Attorney General's appearance today before the committee?
Stonewalled, not interested in actually sharing information, has no interest in assisting us with our congressional and constitutional responsibility of oversight, did everything he could to deflect answering the questions, and it was for him 5 or 6 hours of just simply saying, I can't answer that, I don't know. That's something that we're investigating, and as a result, we didn't learn, I guess, what we should be entitled to learn, which is to what extent he's been engaged and involved with things like the Fannie Willis prosecution in Georgia and the catastrophe that just recently happened in New York with the conviction of President Trump.
So I watched a good part of the hearing today, and my take is we're left with more questions than we gained in terms of answers.
I think that that's legitimate. My line of questioning focused on some information that Jim Jordan, Congressman Jim Jordan, and I have been addressing over the last couple of months. We have learned that the IRS and the Department of Justice have been using AI to actually access the bank records of American citizens. And so I wanted to follow up with Merrick Garland related to that today. And what I really focused on was he first of all admitted that to the extent that they were using AI without probable cause and without a search warrant, it would most likely violate the Fourth Amendment. He also promised that he would get us a more definitive answer as to whether the DOJ and IRS is in fact using AI and to what extent that they are. So that's something that we will continue to follow up with him on. The other issue that I addressed, and then I immediately went to another hearing. I would encourage your watchers to go look at what happened in the Oversight Committee today with Natural Resources, and that is that the international drug cartels have moved in on our Indian reservations, and it's been absolutely devastating for our tribal members. So I focused on that with Merrick Garland in terms of the relationship between the open border and the open border policies and what that is doing to our tribal members, and it's been totally catastrophic. The three individuals that testified in the Oversight Committee with Natural Resources says this is the worst that it's ever been in terms of the open border. And the violence, the human trafficking, and the drug smuggling is absolutely off the charts as a result. So I tried to hold Merrick Garland accountable for the open border and for refusing to actually try to protect our tribes and tribal members in that regard. But again, he just simply tried to deflect attention and blame Congress or anything else that he could.
I want to go back to the Department of Justice's use of AI to track the financial transactions of Americans. Did he give any indication as to why they might be doing this?
Well, there has been someone, it was an undercover video, and it was a gentleman who worked for the IRS. And the reason he said that the IRS and DOJ were doing this was to access our bank records to make sure that we're paying all of the taxes that we're required to pay. And what he focused on were lower income people in our middle class, saying those are the ones that are being targeted with AI so that they can assess and access and monitor our spending habits and our income habits, so our incomes, so that they know whether we're paying our taxes. So that would be the purpose of using AI to access our bank records. So Jim Jordan and I have sent a letter. We received a very non-satisfying response, and we're asking Mr. Garland to provide additional information to describe to what extent AI is being used to violate our Fourth Amendment rights.
Harriet, I want to ask you a question. You said that as he stonewalls or he doesn't answer questions, and I want our viewers and listeners to understand that when a question is asked and oftentimes it's said, well, I don't have that information, you can contact my office or we will get back with you. That rarely, if ever, happens. Am I correct? that follow-up?
What we do is we follow up, but keep in mind the way that they process their responses to us are not designed. The letters that we receive in response are not necessarily designed to get us the information or to be held accountable for the decisions they're made. It is to deflect attention and to use the word again, stonewall. This is one of the reasons why the deep state really is congruous with the unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. What you have is these agencies that are staffed with people who do not believe that Congress should have any oversight what they do at all. And we're really moving to a system where we are being governed by an unelected bureaucracy rather than being the republic that we are with a representative form of government. And this is part of that battle that we have, is as Congress attempts to hold these administrative agencies accountable, their first response is, how do we avoid being held accountable by Congress?
Right.
That's why I do think it's critically important that we start using the power of the purse much more than we do. And in fact, yeah. I think when these agencies come in, we find a way to cut their budget by 10, 20, 30, 40% if they won't answer questions.
Yeah, I think that is extremely important because Americans need to understand that Congress does have oversight, has a responsibility, the check and the balance, but this is it, these oversight hearings, because they do not answer the questions in the letters. And so when you have them before a committee, that is your constitutional duty to make sure that they are doing what is within the dictates and the parameters of their departments. You have, in this case, the Attorney General, who is refusing to comply with a subpoena, not a request, not a question, but a subpoena in terms of you're asking for information that will help you do your job. I mean, what's next?
And he is doing that at the same time that he claims that he's apolitical and that he is not being controlled or he doesn't receive his marching orders from the White House. The very thing that he is withholding from Congress is the audio tape of the interview that Special Counsel Herr had with the President of the United States. And keep in mind, this was the interview that resulted in Herr's decision not to prosecute President Biden for withholding classified documents because he essentially said he is not competent to stand trial, yet this is the leader of the free world. They will not allow us, and they have been withholding the audio tape of that interview because I know that they must recognize that the transcript of Joe Biden was bad enough that just reading the words on the paper, I'm sure his hesitancy and his mannerisms and his repeating himself and the number of times that he had to have a question repeated to him, I think that it demonstrates that he really is incompetent and is suffering from some pretty severe dementia. And that's what they're trying to withhold, not only from the Judiciary Committee, but keep in mind, I just represent 560,000 people in the state of Wyoming. They're keeping this information from the citizens, from the voting public.
Right.
They are trying to prevent us from being able to show how actually incompetent Joe Biden is at this point.
You know, Congresswoman, to your point about the budget being the only tool Congress has, it'd be great to see legislation passed that would cut a 10-20% from any department in which the head is held in contempt of Congress so that you don't have to wait till the next budget year, but it would be triggered within that budget year. We're out of time. Harriet, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, stick around. After the break, President Biden all of a sudden found that he could do something to address the border crisis. We'll talk about it next. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at The Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website is TonyPerkins.com, and be sure and download the new Stand Firm app. You can watch Washington Watch right there on your smartphone. Also have access to the Washington Stand, all the news and commentary coming to you from a biblical perspective. Be sure and give us a rating. A five-star rating would be appreciated. That's the Stand Firm app. President Biden issued an executive order earlier today that would shut down asylum requests at the U.S.-Mexico border once the daily number of migrant encounters reaches an average of 2,500 in a week's time. Now, this comes after 3.5 years of watching this administration and their border policies create a crisis at our southern border, which has not been limited to the border. It's spread all across the country. Now, we've heard repeatedly that the president did not have authority to do this. So what led to this sudden about-face from a president who insisted he could not change his previous border policy? And will this executive order withstand a court challenge from the left? Join me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Josh Perkin. He serves on the House Homeland Security Committee and the House Budget Committee. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Oklahoma. Josh, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Thank you, Tony. Glad to be with you.
So after 3.5 years, and I know that you've sat in many committee oversight hearings where you've been told can't do anything, it's up to Congress to act. Why all of a sudden did the president find authority to act?
Well, I don't think it's that he's had a come to Jesus moment. I think that the smokescreen is with November elections in mind. And keep in mind that what this executive order is designed, it's not going to be Trump-era level executive order. It's still going to allow crossings in the thousands. But, Tony, I'm not going to be surprised if this thing's not set up purposely with the ACLU in mind to bring a lawsuit to be struck down so he can say, gave it the old college try, but we just couldn't quite get there. And as a deflection, I think the only thing this president has really given a real college try for is student loan bailouts.
We're talking 10 million, at least, that have crossed the border during his tenure as president. This still would allow up to another million to come across.
And we're on track, 10 million total. And we're a country of 334 million Americans. And when you factor in, a congressional seat is 750,000 to 800,000 to every 10 years with a census. one displacement of a rural area, which is typically what occurs, unto an urban area picking up a congressional seat, a loss of a rural area picked up by an urban area. Where are a lot of these people going? They're going where sanctuary city status exists. They're going to high population areas. So a re-census, a redrawing of areas, someone picks up in a head-to-head matchup, a urban area where a Democrat has a +5 to +30 advantage, no name against a no name, then, look, I think that's where the real game is. It's about long-term power. And not just that, of course, but most of us know that their aim is ultimately to give them full citizenship status.
Well, and Congressman, this has been part of a debate over the census and who's counted in the census and how they're counted. And so when you have, as you just pointed out, illegal immigrants coming into the country, inflating the numbers in these congressional districts, shifting away from conservative representation to progressive liberal representation.
That's it. You said it much more succinctly than I did. That's it, Tony.
How do we stop this?
Well, we've got to be a people who, number one, we change by congressional law, and we have a president that signs it into law, what Chip Roy's introduced, where it says illegals would not be allowed to vote. We know that's happening. Then you have measures that would not allow them to be tied into a census. And so we have to have a law change to where common sense prevails. It's astounding. Even the concept of come into this country, have a child, and that child automatically becomes a citizen,
right.
Is flagrant of what, you know, our naturalization in Article 1, Section 8 is really to be about.
Yeah. This has a cascading effect. When you look at the border, it's not just the chaos at the border, but as you've pointed out, this has long-term implications for representation in Congress, and whether that is constitutional conservative representation or progressive liberal representation, which is their long-term aim. Josh, I want to switch topics very quickly. You recently sent a letter to the EPA demanding answers on the full negative effects of the abortion pill, mifepristone. And this is something that's often overlooked, because this is looked at in terms of the abortion issue, the sanctity of life issue. But there are implications for the environment that are being ignored. Talk about it.
Yeah, well, let me first of all say that the way that they studied mifepristone and its effect goes back to a 1996 case study where a minimal number of abortions were taking place utilizing mifepristone. That's what they build their formula around in terms of what they think is happening with drinking water, ultimately, wastewater that turns into drinking water. And look, we're approaching 65% threshold of all abortions in this country are now based on this drug, a two-part drug. Utilization once and then come back again. And look, the horrendous element of the unborn life being taken. All right. So we're not discounting
right,
that.
Right.
Senator Marco Rubio and I, though, wrote a letter because under a liberal administration, liberal regime, we want to point out you're using 1996 information when it was minimally used, and now 60% of all abortions are mifepristone-based in this country. What do you think is going to happen when you put a chemical that's strong enough to kill an individual in its mother's womb into our wastewater, which turns ultimately recycled back into drinking water? And so that's what we're doing, is we are trying to find a very wise way of highlighting what they don't want to talk about, what they don't want to study, and we want to get to, ultimately, the problem of utilizing this. And look, for Tony, for full transparency, I'm totally against mifepristone use, period.
Right.
Because I stand for life. But sometimes you've got to be able to point to other areas when you have people who are tone deaf to one argument and say, what about this argument?
But you're absolutely right, Josh. But this also shows the byproduct of disrespecting life and pursuing these instruments that kill, because it goes beyond, just like we were talking about the border, it goes beyond what you see with the immediately face to face. There are long-term consequences here. Very quickly, any answer yet back from the EPA?
No, but to compound on what you just said, great quote I heard one time, there's a high price to pay for low living. You're right.
Yes.
God sets things in place and he sets things in motion. Why is it all the results of adult stem cell research are where we're seeing gains and nothing on embryonic?
Yeah.
Because God's plan is perfect, and his plan produces blessing.
All right, Josh, got to leave it there. Always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today. All right, folks, stick around. We're coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of this break.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. Be sure to check out the website, TonyPerkins.com, and also get the new, brand new Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store, download the Stand Firm app, or text app, APP, to 67742. All right, as we were just talking about, there's a lot more than meets the eye when it comes to what is pushed up here in Washington, D.C. Consider this. Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer announced that he's going to bring to the floor of the Senate tomorrow a bill called the Right to Contraception Act. Oh, well, yeah, that's fine. But it does a lot more. While Democrats fearmonger about contraception, these maneuvers provide a reminder of the left's true priority, abortion on demand until birth and usurping all the state laws that protect life. Now, we saw another example of this week when the Biden administration confirmed that President Biden would veto spending for veterans if the appropriations legislation does not satisfy the White House's agenda for both abortion and transgender procedures. Now, given the Democrats' extreme abortion agenda, how should pro-life legislators respond? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Dr. Andy Harris. He serves on the House Appropriations Committee. He is a member of the GOP Doctors Caucus and co-chair of the House Pro-Life Caucus. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Maryland. Dr. Harris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you again, Tony.
So there's always a lot more than meets the eye. So the Senate is going to be, you know, in the wake of the Alabama case and the court case, so there's all this hue and cry about Republicans wanting to take away contraception. Never heard that, never seen that. It's never been discussed that I've seen. This bill, though, does a lot more than that. Talk about it.
Yeah, you know, again, you're right. They create a straw man. They somehow think that somehow contraception is going to be banned somewhere. It hasn't been banned anywhere, and nobody's even talking about it. But they want to do a messaging bill. The problem is it's very broadly worded. I think it goes way beyond what most people think about as the availability of contraceptives. I mean, it's any possible device or drug. I mean, it's, again, it's way too broad. It has nowhere it's going to go in the House. So it has no chance of becoming law. It's a purely political message. messaging bill. And again, it's a straw man. There is no one talking about, you know, removing contraception availability in any state. But that's what the Democrats want to talk about. They don't want to talk about inflation. They don't want to talk about a broken border. They somehow want this this entire election to be about contraception and abortion.
But hidden in their bill, as you pointed out, it's very broad. This, as I read it, would protect chemical abortion pills, making it a federal protection, which could usurp the right of states that want to make sure that the health and care of women is not put at risk by selling pills through the mail.
That's absolutely right. Again, it all depends on the definition. It depends on what prosecutor is going to, federal prosecutor is going to prosecute someone in a state for, again, some method of something that the state doesn't feel falls under this bill, but Merrick Garland might feel it does. So, again, it's a bad idea. It's a solution in search of a problem. Again, it's purely for political purposes. And you have to be very careful when we do anything that's purely for political purposes here in Washington.
Well, let's come back over to the House side of the Capitol, where even today, debate on the House floor about the Veterans Affairs and Military Construction Funding Bill, and the White House already issuing a veto threat over this annual funding bill that funds our veterans if abortion is restricted or transgender ideology, these mutilating surgeries are restricted.
Well, again, Tony, the only restriction in that bill is a Hyde-type protection. It just basically says you can't spend VA funds to do abortions. I mean, that's like standard Hyde language in almost every single federal appropriations bill. It should be included in the VA bill. I worked hard to get that Hyde Amendment protection in the bill. And again, most people don't think you should be spending VA health dollars to provide abortion. Government-funded abortion, just like they don't think it should be done by other agencies, other federal agencies or programs. With regard to gender-affirming surgery, I don't think a lot of Americans view that as a really high priority in VA health to provide gender-affirming care. And actually, I call it gender-denying care because that's really what it is. And again, it has no role in the VA. The president wants to hang up the bill on military constructing barracks for our troops. Again, constructing important defense installations. He wants to, and the VA health care, he wants to hang that up because we don't think the Veterans Administration should be providing, gender-changing care. I don't think the average American goes along with the president on this one.
Well, the Hyde Amendment goes back to, I think, 1976, and it's had 80% of Americans support the idea that we shouldn't be using taxpayer funds to end the life of an unborn child. But it also speaks to the allocation of these resources. You have limited resources, and rather than provide care for veterans or build military installations, they want to fund abortion.
That's right. Absolutely. As you know, Tony, not every veteran is eligible for VA health care. I mean, there are priorities. I'm a veteran. I'm not eligible for VA health care because there are higher priorities. So when you spend money on, again, gender-changing care, you spend money on abortions, what you're doing is you're drawing that line to obtain VA health care at a higher level. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be marshaling our resources to actually allow more veterans to obtain health care from the VA, not fewer.
You're absolutely right. And I thank you, Dr. Harris, for fighting that fight on Capitol Hill. And thanks also for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, after the break, Dr. Robert Malone joins us with his take on the recent World Health Assembly that took place in Geneva. And I'm going to get his reaction to the appearance on Capitol Hill yesterday from Dr. Anthony Fauci, Mr. Science. Stay tuned. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
All right, be sure and get the new Stand Firm app. You can text the app to 67742, or you can find it in the App Store. That's the Stand Firm app. Lots of new tools for you there to be an engaged citizen. So check it out, the Stand Firm app. Our word for today comes from 2 Samuel chapter 13. It's the account of David's firstborn son, Amnon, raping his half-sister Tamar, and then David hearing the news. But when King David heard all these things, he was very angry. He was angry, but he didn't act. Now, remember what Nathan told David would be the consequences of his adulterous and murderous relationship with Bathsheba. Now, therefore, the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up adversity against you from your own house. Now, unfortunately, this is just the beginning of David's troubles of immorality, humiliation, death, estrangement, and even more. Why? Because David acted upon his desires in a manner that God said was outside the boundaries of his design for human relationships. Our daily decisions to walk with God have implications far beyond ourselves, to include our spouses, our children, and our grandchildren. I invite you to join us on our daily journey through the Bible. Text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the former head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, testified before the House Oversight and Accountability Select Subcommittee on the coronavirus pandemic yesterday. Now, throughout his time before the subcommittee, he both downplayed his influence on government pandemic guidance and denied that he sought to cover up investigations into a lab leak causing as the origins being the origins of the pandemic. Now, despite the fireworks throughout the hearing, did Dr. Fauci deflect accountability, or did we come any closer to getting answers? Well, with me now to talk about this is Dr. Robert Malone, Chief Medical and Regulatory Officer for the Unity Project and internationally recognized physician scientist who specializes in advanced development of medical countermeasures to infectious diseases. Dr. Malone, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me on, Tony. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing quite well. Thank you. I want to get your thoughts on Dr. Fauci's testimony yesterday, in particular that he acknowledged that some of the dictates that they put out lacked scientific evidence.
Yes, yeah, so in particular the six-foot distancing, but throughout all of this, what was clear in Dr. Fauci's testimony was, number one, that he had been very well coached. This was extremely smooth presentation. We saw an aw shucks down-home Tony that I have never seen. It's not his real personality. And we saw very skillful deflection and blaming of others. In the case of these things like the six-foot distancing, mask usage, et cetera, he put the blame for these policies that were, he acknowledged, were not based on science directly on the CDC and by inference on Bob Redfield, who he does not get along with. The whole exercise of his presentation was fascinating to watch, from the adulation that was given by particularly the Democratic side, painting him as a hero, through very collegial, friendly, kind of chummy conversation that he had with the Republican council towards the end. He made a number of statements in which he threw people under the bus, basically, and notably this gentleman, Dr. Morenz,
right,
who has the title of being a senior advisor to Dr. Fauci, had been with Dr. Fauci for decades. If you believe Dr. Morenz's emails, they have a close working relationship, see each other regularly, it sounded like, at least on a weekly basis. Dr. Morenz has the ability to visit Tony in his home and pass documents. But Dr. Fauci basically acted as if he hardly knew him and said that the title of senior advisor was really just basically honorific. It was just a particular governmental title. It didn't really mean anything in terms of the relationship with Fauci. And yet we have this series of emails and correspondence between Mr. Daszak, a kind of an intermediary at Boston University, and Mr. Morenz, Dr. Morenz, in which Dr. Morenz is relating to Dr. Daszak conversations that he's having with Dr. Fauci on a regular basis, down to the level of granularity of talking about Dr. Fauci getting rather colorful in his language when he's expressing his sympathy for Dr. Daszak and all he's been through. But Tony acts like, Tony Fauci acts as if he hardly knew the guy. This is just not credible based on the emails. He also said that if the Great Barrington Declaration had been adopted, I believe he said there would be a million more deaths. That's completely at odds with the data. And remember that the Great Barrington Declaration was basically a restatement of what had been U.S. government and WHO policy up until the point when the U.S. government adopted and WHO adopted basically the CCP solution. But Dr. Fauci, in his efforts to defend himself, basically said that the authors of the Great Barrington Declaration would have caused a million deaths if they had had their way with people. Again, striking example of Dr. Fauci just going aggressive directly against people that were saying things that were inconvenient for him. This happened all the way through the testimony, but he did it with a smile.
So let me kind of dig down on that, Dr. Malone, to see kind of what's behind this. Because when you look at the consequences, and he, you know, he, putting on that different front, maybe it's designed to just make this thing go away, they can move on. But there was some acknowledgement that there were consequences, non-public health consequences to the decisions for shutdowns and such. But I don't see any evidence to suggest that any in the scientific field there or here in Washington are acting upon that information. In fact, you've been tracking the World Health Organization. It looks like they're trying to cement into concrete everything that was done wrong during the COVID-19 pandemic into marching orders for all member states.
Cement and more, really further expand Dr. Tedros's power to act unilaterally. And there's some new clauses in there about the importance of nation states building capabilities in their communication systems for public health to counter mis and disinformation. There's two separate statements in, I think it's Annex number one.
Right.
What was particularly striking about what happened in Geneva, and of course I was there because I was involved in a conference that was being held simultaneously and then a protest that was held last Saturday against the World Health Organization in front of the UN building. But what was remarkable was that this meeting of the World Health Assembly, which is an annual meeting of representatives from all the nation states that are members of the World Health Organization, signatories, they have rules about adoption of new regulations or modifications to these international health regulations, IHRs. And that requires that they complete the draft and then allow the nation states 4 months to review them. But instead, what they did is they literally worked late into the night behind closed doors to come up with these modifications to the IHRs and then passed them by acclamation, no actual vote. I hear the rumor was that they even turned off the microphones for many of the nation states so that they wouldn't interfere in the discussions of among those that were empowered to participate. This type of unilateral behavior, really arrogance, seems to be typical of the World Health Organization under Mr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, Dr. Tedros. And that is another reason for serious concern about these policies that are being put in place, because he's being given a lot of power. He basically is completely unaccountable to anybody that's elected.
So let me ask you about their procedures that require these to be published in advance so that the member states can review them. Is there any enforcement mechanism that would require them to adhere to these stated guidelines and procedures?
Only in the sense that if they fail to comply with these agreed upon procedures, then multiple international lawyers from the UK, US, and elsewhere have asserted that that would make any product, work product coming out of their deliberations literally illegal. It would have no weight in terms of international law, which is what they're trying to advance, is basically a treaty. This international health regulations is functionally a treaty. And so by violating the rules that have been agreed upon by the member states and proceeding with this by acclamation rather than an actual vote, and I understand that at least five nation states subsequently objected to this, even though they asserted that it was unanimous, that makes the document not legally binding. That's the enforcement, is that if this was taken into international court, it wouldn't hold up.
So that would be the remedy then for those concerned about this. It would have to go to the international court and be challenged. Would it have to be by one of the member states who opposed, or do individual citizens?
Yeah, no, member states would be the ones withstanding, but I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an international lawyer, but that's my understanding. What we have, so that's one remedy, and that's obviously challenging and time-consuming. The other one has been really piloted by the state of Louisiana, in which states within the United States, you know, we're focused here on ourselves, the state of Louisiana has passed legislation that says that they will not abide by the diktats of the World Health Organization. And by the U.S. Constitution, the right to regulate the practice of medicine is not assigned to the federal government and therefore vests to the states. what this sets up is a constitutional crisis because these are being treated as treaties, even though the Senate has not reviewed and approved. And so that gets into some really dicey issues with the Constitution about the primacy of the Constitution relative to any international treaties that are agreed upon by the executive branch. This turns out to not be entirely clear in the U.S. Constitution. As it's
well, it, because no one envisioned that we would be marching down this path to global governance, which is exactly what this is. We just have a couple minutes left, Dr. Malone. I'm going to go back to, and these two issues are very relevant to what Dr. Fauci had to testify before a committee yesterday and the World Health Organization, because what we saw during the COVID pandemic and what the Biden administration did, as you talked about, restricting communication, setting up these systems by which it could be suppressed, the mandates, the closures, the masking, all of these, the vaccinations.
Vaccine cards are included, digital or paper.
We don't have any evidence to suggest that all of these things worked. In fact, in some cases, it's contrary.
Thank you, Tony. Yes, I could reach out and hug you for saying that precisely. As you point out, they're doubling down on failed policies, and the logic is that somehow the World Health Organization, with all of its self-congratulation, has done a good job during this, and that's absolutely not the case. But the logic is they've done such a good job that they deserve more power, more authority, and more capital.
So I want to go back to my earlier question. Was this the coaching for Dr. Fauci, knowing that he represented what the WHO is after, and so he needed to come in before committee and deflect it and not be combative, hoping this will go away so the World Health Organization is able to advance their agenda?
I wish I could endorse that Dr. Fauci had such a global long-range view. My personal bias is that Dr. Fauci is mostly focused on Dr. Fauci and evading accountability for his role in the mismanagement of the COVID crisis. He showed all the signs of somebody who'd been carefully prepared, as one does, for instance, if you're going into an expert witness situation against hostile lawyers, and came across very effective with this aw shucks, down home kind of tone, which was contrasted with an audio clip that was played by one of the congressmen, one of the few physicians who practiced during the COVID crisis, practiced emergency medicine. And he played a clip in which Dr. Fauci was being extremely aggressive in an interview, stating that basically, it was going to be necessary to force people to take the vaccine by withdrawing their ability to earn a living and support their families as a way to overcome their ideologic issues with taking the vaccine. As you know, one of those ideologic issues is religious exemptions.
Right, which they completely swept aside. Dr. Malone, we're out of time. Always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us. Always great to have you here at Washington Watch. Be sure and download the app. Until next time, you know what the Apostle Paul says. He says, when you've done all you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.